This is The Producers with Ryan Dream, a podcast designed for radio imaging, commercial production, all things audio. Feedback is encouraged at ryanontheradio.com.
All right, here we go. Thanks again for checking it out. As always, I do appreciate it. I also appreciate all the emails that I get, and I should say right out of the gate, I apologize that this episode's delayed. I mean, everybody's got stuff to do. I know you're not just sitting there waiting for it to be downloadable, but I do like to get these out about every 3 weeks, 4 weeks at the most, and that just wasn't possible. I've got still a few things going on. Some guys that I'm going to talk to eventually out west were delayed, and they got sick. They started traveling. They have lives. It's ridiculous. And then I have a few other things working. I'm not really going to give much information about it yet, but I do have a surprise for my first annual episode, which will be coming up at the end of August. So I will attempt to do one episode between now and then. Shouldn't be a problem. I have quite a few people lined up at this point. But anyway, so exciting things to come. One more time, I apologize for the delay in the posting of this episode, but I am excited about who I'll be talking to today, and it did become a two-parter as I'm recording this intro after I recorded the interview. Steve Stone, I've had a lot of requests for him to be an interview, and so I said, well, what the heck, he's a good guy, very available. As you'll hear in the interview, he pretty much opens up everything, gives all of his secrets away, so you can be the next Steve Stone. Super talented radio imaging voice. He can deliver a variety of formats well. And also, though he doesn't have time to do it anymore, a very talented radio imaging producer, one of the many super creative guys that came out of K-Rock in New York, which is now playing, I don't know, what are they playing? Folk music? No, they're like a Z100's enemy now. Kind of sad, but they're not K-Rock LA, so it wasn't like we lost K-Rock LA. That would have been a tragic day of radio. That'll never happen, though. Well, knock on wood. All right, I'm on a tangent again. So, big anniversary show coming up. We've got plenty of content to go on the website. If you're looking for some screen caps from the past, there's a bunch up there, but Steve's actually going to hook me up with some for this episode that he talks about. And I also have a lot of links and resources that have been sent in to me over the last couple few weeks that I will put up there as well. So there should be some good extra content to go to on the podcast page on RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now we shall kick things off with some sample of the one and only Steve Stone. We'll get you some of his CHR stuff right now.
The biggest radio station on the planet with 10 million listeners.
What's up, world?
France, Italy, Dubai, Thailand, India, and Toronto. Ladies and gentlemen, we are Virgin.
Virgin Radio. We really can't have radios here.
Listen live. Power 96.5.com.
Virgin Radio.
Hey, Toronto. Virgin. 9 great songs in a row. 999.
There he is. That's actually, I played you a bit of the CHR demo of the versatile and one and only Steve Stone. I've had a lot of requests. I get guest requests for this podcast now. By the way, almost coming up on my year anniversary, so I'm almost like a professional at this now, so you should be excited.
Wow, that's awesome. I did check out your site after you called me and stuff, and I obviously, you've had some heavy hitters, and I'm really excited to be part of that mix.
I wanted to especially, well, I was going to say I've had multiple requests to interview you, which is cool. And, you know, there's people all over the country, and then there's, I guess, it's just gotten really international. So it's a lot of fun that people, it's this small, tight-knit community of producers and voice talent, but it's worldwide, you know? And so people were interested in hearing from you. And I know you're the type of person I like to interview because you have both worlds under your belt. You know, you were an imaging producer and then imaging producer and voice talent, right? They kind of merged, and then now you're 100% voice. Is that pretty much how it goes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my day in and day out, 99% of the work I do is voice only, but I still do production. I don't think I'll ever stop doing production. It's one of those things that's, you know, it's in my blood. I came from a production background, and you know, I just love audio. You know, I mean, I can, you know, if I wasn't reading copy, I'd be sitting there messing with stuff. So I still do imaging. on a regular basis, but it's usually now special projects, stuff like helping people out with startups or reimagining a station or freshening things up or just something that's very unique and different, composites. I really have a good time putting together station composites and air checks and stuff like that. So stuff that needs a little extra attention, that's what I work with.
Yeah. Well, I think we're definitely going to get to your K-Rock days in a bit. Give me some of your background though. I don't know if you care about dating yourself or aging yourself or whatever, but you know, kind of when did you start and where did you start? And then, how did you get, what was your path in the beginning?
Ryan, I was born in a log cabin and, I got into radio when I was really young, actually, pretty close to right out of getting out of high school. I grew up in Northern California in the Wine Valley and, I originally wanted to be a comic book illustrator. That's what I want. Ever since I was a kid, I used to always draw, and that's what I wanted to do for a profession. But over the course of a summer, I kind of just switched paths and got into radio. I was, like I said, I was 19 in Northern California. I was an intern. I ran coffee for the morning show. I would, do dubs, run the God Squad shows on Sunday mornings, everything that could be done. And I was on the air. I was a jock. I wasn't very good, pretty average at best, but I really liked being in the production room. So a couple years after that, I was basically just doing production and being on the air as a necessity. Was lucky enough to work for a program director named Randy Scovel, who worked with in California the last few years I was there. And he got a job in Dayton, Ohio in 1993 and said, "Hey, going to put a station on the air. Would love for you to come work with me." And I was like, "Great. This is my chance to, get out of hometown and go on that giant adventure that is the vagabond, world of radio travel." So I went to Dayton, Ohio. Things unfortunately didn't work out very well. The station got sold. So probably around end of 94, 95, I really made the decision to just be off air full time. And I was lucky enough to just do production for three stations down in North Carolina. So I really worked really hard when I was down in Carolina, and a buddy of mine in San Francisco who I'd worked with when I first got into radio, a guy named Lester Temple, who's still the commercial director at Live 105 out there. He knew I was looking to move up, and he called me and said, "Hey, my company's going to be putting on a station on the air in Pittsburgh. And I think you'd be good for it. Get a tape together, send it out here and see what's going on." And I was very fortunate that I got a job in Pittsburgh. This was in the beginning of 96. Mm. And I worked there for about 4 years at the X. And then in the end of 99, I got offered the imaging director job at K-Rock in New York. So I went there at the end of 99 and stayed there for 3 years. And that was the end of 2002. And I went off on my own at the end of 2002, and I've been on my own since. 13 years being an imaging director, and then the last 7 years I've been an independent dude.
Just cut in real quick and get to K-Rock in a second. I want to play a sample from some of your K-Rock production. So here we go, back in the early aughts, Steve Stone, K-Rock.
"We now take you to the secret headquarters of Stone Temple Pilots. K-Rock Superheroes, where the most anticipated event is being pondered.
I don't know, rumor had it we're doing this DFP thing. What do you think, guys?"
Maybe, yeah.
"I heard we might do that."
Looks like we might.
"I'm just going to see James."
"Eric, you want to do it?"
"Yeah, if we can catch a cab."
"Okay."
K-Rock's dysfunctional family picnic. Bigger is better. DFP 5 is the biggest yet.
Tomorrow. Let's play the Dysfunctional Family Feud!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Jackass family. And the Trailer Trash family. Okay, well, we surveyed 100 people. Top 5 answers on the board. Name something your uncle does.
Yes, jackasses.
How about pee on the dog?
Okay, show me pee on the dog! Yes, the number 4 answer. Okay, trailer trash.
Yeah, that trash, eh?
Whatever.
Oh, how about touch my sister?
Okay, show me touch my sister! Yes, the number 1 answer. 65 people said touch my sister.
K-Rock's dysfunctional family picnic.
Yeah, so let's go back to K-Rock then. So it looks like I mean, your story getting up into K-Rock was pretty standard. You started off at home like a lot of people do. You take that sort of media market job, and then you get the sort of big break, if you will, I guess, Pittsburgh. But the epic break is the K-Rock gig. Tell me, I want to talk about K-Rock a little bit before we get more into your voice career. But how exactly did you get that job? What were the circumstances that had to happen for it to open up? And, what were your feelings at the time as well?
Well, what happened was I had just, my wife and I had just had our first son. And the last thing on my mind was moving. So I was just, shocked when I got this call one day from Steve Kingston's office at K-Rock in New York. This was the fall of 99. And first of all, when I got the call, I honestly thought it was a friend of mine playing a joke, because it sounded just like my friend. And I'm like, dude, you're a dick,
Yeah.
And then it was like, here's the callback number. So I was like, 212. Okay. So I called back the number and it was really them. I was shocked. From what I remember, they got my name from a couple different sources, one being my current agent and the other being Joe Kelly from AB Deli.
Absolutely. I work with Joe.
Yeah. Joe's the best. I mean, he's just been such a great supporter for so many years for so many different people, including me. And, I'm very appreciative of that.
Do me a favor and give him a call and tell him he's a great guy. But he's a little shy. I want to get him on here to tell his story someday. So nudge him for me. Okay.
Yeah, man, for sure. I'll definitely call him. Yeah. I owe him a call anyway. So,
good.
But anyway, Steve Kingston found out about me from a few different people, and I was really fortunate because, being in Pittsburgh, getting to New York wasn't really a big hassle. It's like an hour flight. So, I went out and, I was so nervous to talk to Steve Kingston and K-Rock in New York that I convinced my wife before I went to this interview. I said, I got to buy a suit. I got to buy a suit. I got to look professional. So I went to to the store and I bought a nice suit and a tie,
for a rock station. Nice.
Exactly. I walk into the lobby and I'm sitting down there and here comes Steve Kingston walking in to the green room and he's like, "You here for the sales job?" And I said no. He's like, "Well, then take the damn suit off, man." So obviously,
wait, who was in the job? Either that had just left or was you were replacing?
Oh, okay, yeah. Gosh, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Brian Kelsey, who is a genius, was the creative
Brian.
Director.
Okay,
yeah, he was the creative director, and he was leaving to go on his own. And he had been there for 3 years. He'd been there since the station signed on the alternative format. When they made that switch in 95, 96. And I had contact with him and we'd talked in the past. So again, it was like another thing, he talked to Kingston as well. So I was very fortunate to have people throw my name around. But anyway, so I'm in the lobby there with this suit and I felt like such a dork, but it's New York. I mean, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
I was trying to be back then, that was the corporate headquarters for Infinity Broadcasting. So I was like, this is going to be, heavy hitters walking around. And so anyway, I was a little embarrassed, but it was a good thing. I think it showed Kingston that I was obviously pretty serious about, coming in, and I was very respectful, but it was crazy. I mean, I was there and walking through the building, looking out the window, and you see the big, skyscrapers, and you walk past and there's Howard Stern's studio, and it was just really overwhelming. But I also was just inside internally, screaming with joy because I was like, this is what I want so bad. But again, it was also one of those things where it's like, oh God, now they got the job. I got to actually do this job. So
yeah, that was actually, I was going to say something that I felt when I came to Dallas is it was like, okay, great. I got a job in a big market and I'm excited. And then I started to think, well, wait a minute. What if they think I'm something I'm not? Or what if, how do I do it?
Well, that's the thing that, I think when you move into a bigger job, the first a little bit on the job, you start having those I'm a fraud nightmares, okay, that was easy. How am I ever going to get the next project done? And honestly, it was the three hardest years I'd ever worked in my life in radio, but also the three most productive as far as the volume and the quality of work that I did and the growth that I had creatively. So I, you know, it was, I looked at it as kind of like graduate school. I'd worked all those years to get to that point, and then it was sort of like I kind of learned on the job a little bit, but it was like instinct took over, and I was surrounded by a lot of really creative people, and it just everything kind of just clicked. You know, I had a really strong program director. I had a morning show that didn't need to be sold. I mean, it was one of those things. It's like all you have to say is Howard Stern. It's like what you right. know. It's that's easy. But the biggest key was selling the station's image and the artists and the different events. Again, I was just part of that creative team, and it was the best experience of my life. And I'll never duplicate that experience as far as on a creative level with working with other people, I don't think, because it was so high pressure and it was so unique. And unfortunately, you know, the station is no longer around, but
I had a buddy that was jocking there, but up until the end, he was never actually told he was fired. They just flipped formats and he stopped showing up.
God, yeah.
It was real bad there at the end. I mean, I think people should be pretty ashamed of how K-Rock went down, you know, when it finally went down.
You know what? Radio is really a tough business, and especially the last 5-6 years, things have gotten really tough. But I got to tell you, man, there's just something very special about that city, that building, and that time, and I'm so grateful to have gone through that. It's one of those things where you know, there's certain times in your life where you wish you could stand back and see things happening. Things moved so fast I couldn't, but just with time and distance, I've been able to like appreciate those 3 crazy years, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. Let me talk. I do want to move. I want to spend half this interview on your voice career, but when you were working at K-Rock, you know, obviously you understand the massive, you know, behemoth size of the station you're at. But tell me a little bit about the day to day. I mean, how did you get stuff written? How was stuff created? You had Will Morgan on some of the voicing. Is that right?
Yeah, Will. Yeah. When I got there, John Frost and Will were providing voice parts for the imaging. And what happened was the way my position was worked, even when Kelsey was there, was that basically the in-house imaging creative person would voice the long form stuff, the promos, and kind of switch it off with Will, and Frost would do a lot of the smaller stuff. When I got there, it wasn't too much longer that Frost had left CBS and went to go work on his own, so that kind of stopped, and we increased Will's workload. And I started voicing a lot of promos, and that's really where I kind of really started working on my chops. And Will was, and still is, you know, awesome. And I've known him for a long, long time, and have a tremendous amount of respect for his talent. And I would get into the station. The hard thing for me is I really couldn't start early because the Stern Show would go on usually past 10. So when I would get in, first thing I would do is I would kind of just work on basically show prep for my job. I would work on what's in the news, what's the happenings, and I would kind of put together this kind of like a bullet point list of things to talk to Steve Kingston about every day. So I would do that, and then we'd meet about what was going on, what needed to be done. Kind of he would set up what he would call a punch list, things that he wanted me to get accomplished that day, and then I would get to work. I would just take that stuff. I would work on writing. It was kind of a back and forth thing. I would work on scripts and send it back to him, and he would punch it up, change things, edit things out, send it back to me. It was really a neat experience like that. And I really learned, and I'm a big fan of writing. I really do enjoy writing, but I really learned how to write quicker and shorter when I worked there, because instead of explaining things, instead of explaining in a contest promo how certain things were, like in a sentence, Kingston had this great way of abbreviating things, and he taught me how to write shorter. Just in his whole thing was you have to write in sound bites, and I thought that was a really great thing to learn, writing in sound bites and not writing in thoughts, because people write things to be read, but not to be read in a promo. It's kind of different. Yeah, so it was absolutely. it was a really great experience like that. And so anyway, so we would collaborate on writing, and Mike Peer, who was the music director at the time, he would help me write. And it was also a guy named John Lascalzo, who worked there for a while, who helped me write as well. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, basically, I felt that there was, you know, anything went, which was great. So yeah. Once we had something, you know, I would just go at it, go in the production room and start cranking things out. And what was interesting was I came from a Pro Tools background, and I've been working with Pro Tools now probably for 12, 13 years. Mm. But at K-Rock, they had an Orban Odyssey, which
I was going to guess that.
Yeah, which I'd known they had, and I was trying to get up to speed on it before I moved to New York. So I called a buddy across town here in Pittsburgh who worked at a station that had one, and he let me come up and kind of just, you know, jump on it for a while. And it was interesting. It was definitely different.
So let's move. I played some of your Dysfunctional Family Picnic stuff as we started this. Let me hear, to round out the K-Rock talk, a couple other bits of your K-Rock production that people can enjoy. Put together just a couple pieces of a couple promos here, and we'll check that out.
Wow, look how big that redwood is.
Enough sightseeing. Look at my redwood.
Oh my, it's making me so,
excited?
No, sick.
K-Rock Man.
Greetings, nature lovers.
What?
Who are you?
Looks like I got here just in time. Your day in the woods came up short.
Hey.
Calm down, son. It happens to a lot of guys. That's why K-Rock gives you the pleasure you need.
That is so important.
And the sensitivity you deserve with Pearl Jam's new DVD before you can buy it.
I like being sensitive.
I'm sure you do, Nancy.
The name's Tony.
Whatever.
Call the K-Rock studio lines right now. 888.
K-Rock.
Here you. K-Rock gets back on the blacktop with AZDC.
If I'm a lid
on the highway to hell, you cruise the tri-state inside the K-Rock AC/DC tour bus. You're stopping in designated K-Rock bus stops to pick up K-Rock listeners. Meet and ride around with the band.
Hi, this is Angus Young of AC/DC.
Feel safe. With the bus lane, of course. Wear Brian Johnson's trademark hat. Raid AC/DC's fridge. And announce your presence with authority in AC/DC's official loop.
There you go. Part one complete. Obviously, that was a lot of background in K-Rock days. We now will move in part two, his transition into the voiceover world, going on his own. And we'll also give up a whole ton of tips and tricks, techniques, a lot of cool stuff to listen to, especially if you're somebody who might be a producer looking to shift over into that world, or if you are a voice talent coming in to listen to Steve, because he is a voice talent. Part two is going to be pretty informational for you. So go check it out. Thank you again for listening. Bye.